Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. I am very happy to say that Nate has left the area. He is no longer with us, and I'm sure my guest is happy that he's not there anymore either, because he was kind of wicked last night. Anyway,
oh, yes.
It's beautiful outside. The sun is shining, and I'm going to take a walk later and enjoy the fresh air. But first, for those of you that like to go to the library, you might want to think twice about it after you hear this. Carrie Singleton is just about done with Clover Ridge, Connecticut, until she's offered a job as the head of programs and events at the spooky local library, complete with its own librarian ghost. That was so cool. Her first major event is a program presented by a retired homicide cop, Al Buckley, and the poor guy gets killed right on the spot. He dies right there. And I'm not going to tell you anymore because the medical examiner told me I can't say what killed him, and I promised the police I would keep my mouth shut. So, let's get the author on, and it's Marilyn Levinson, a.k.a. Allison Brook, and this is a fantastic thing. And if your books are ever overdue, well, you better hope that you don't become a victim of death overdue in a haunted library mystery. Hi, how you doing?
Oh, I'm fine. Thanks, Fran. I'm glad to be here today.
Yeah, I'm glad you're here today, too. And we're going to get started with some cool
Thanks,
questions.
Fran. Glad to be here today. Uh-huh.
I don't know why I have an echo on my phone now.
You know what it was? I put the thing on my a second later, so I turned it off.
Oh, that's okay, because I got that on one of my interviews when I was interviewed by Maxine Thompson 2 weeks ago for my new book, and it was like, what was that? Oh, my God. I had to stick the phone in the drawer.
Right. You could only have one thing at a time. Yes.
Yep. Describe the town of Clover Ridge and why Carrie Singleton just wanted to leave and never come back. And she was living with her aunt and uncle and didn't talk to her parents. How come?
Well, she had rather a dysfunctional family life. She, her family, the Singletons, her father's family, had a family farm just outside of Clover Ridge, Connecticut. Now, I've made up Clover Ridge, Connecticut, but I did have a real town in mind that I visited once, just once, because I was impressed by the village green and all of the old buildings, that really, you know, houses and restaurants built around, they're old, they're from the 17th and 1800s, framing the green, which is rather big. And the library is facing the green as well. It was an old mansion as well. And as I said, getting back to Carrie, the place was beautiful, and her great aunt and uncle sold the farm, and they bought a house facing the green on the other side of the library. And she has had an unhappy childhood. Her mother was never a very caring mother, and her father, to put it bluntly, is a thief and a felon. And he has been absent from her life most of the time. Her mother is now remarried, living with her husband is a younger man. He's an actor involved with movies. They're living in Hollywood. And ever since college, Carrie has been floating around. She doesn't feel very settled. She does have a degree. She has a library science degree. And she decides that in May, the book takes place in October, to go and stay with her great aunt and uncle back in Clover Ridge, Connecticut. And that is why she is there now.
Well, she wanted to leave, but she doesn't.
Oh, you mean why did she want to leave again? Well, she was there for 7 months, and her uncle Bosco, who is on the board, the library board, managed to get her a job at the library. But she was a floating librarian. She went from one place to the other, from the children's section to the main section, and she really wasn't doing very much more than shelving and reshelving books. And kind of very low-level chores that anyone really could do. And she was frustrated, and she just felt it was time to leave.
Well, before I forget, anybody that wants to buy this book, before I forget, the link is on my Facebook wall for Amazon. I put it there just before the show. So, you know, get started right now while you're listening, because I know there are people listening. I could see it on my Facebook wall. So she was offered the job as events program director, and she takes it. And she doesn't really want to. She sort of hems and haw. How come? And the lady that she's working with, I wouldn't want to work with either. Woo.
Well, she has just made up her mind to leave town when the offer comes. And she's kind of in that mode of moving on. Part of her moving on mode comes because she just doesn't feel she'll fit in anywhere. And this comes out of left field, this offer, and she just is not ready to say, I'm going to settle, even though it's such a wonderful opportunity and it's what she got her master's in. But then something or someone tells her not to be an idiot and to tell her boss, or the boss of the director, that she will think it over at least and not to say, no, I won't take the job.
Well, Sally is not my favorite character, but she sort of fits because my husband gets, I don't have to go to the library to get books out because, you know, everybody, they just send them.
And oh, that's very nice.
Isn't that great? I don't have to buy books, yeah. But there are days, Marilyn, that I get books that I don't expect and don't really want to read, but I do it because if they send it to me, okay, fine. So Sally's a director. And she sort of forces her hand. So what made her decide to take the job? And part of the reason would be, I'm glad she took it for other reasons. But how come she decided to take it anyway?
Well, first of all, she was, other people convinced her to take it. Evelyn Havers was the ghost who was urging her not to say anything foolish. And she prompted her. She said, well, at least tell Sally that you'll think about it. And then when she went home that evening, her aunt and uncle told her to think about it. And her great aunt, Harriet, who never had any children of her own, she said, well, just keep in mind, you could always leave. Give it a try. And so Carrie decides to take, that she will take, she will accept the position.
Sounds like my mother who told me when I was going to become an educator, give it a shot and see what you think. 36 years later, I wasn't sorry.
See, she was so smart, yes. I found out later when I left, because 9 years after leaving my teaching job when I taught Spanish, my principal revealed to me that my mother had called him and told him that I was a very good teacher and he should hire me. I was in college. I was a very good teacher, mind you. So these mothers can do things that you least expect.
Yeah, she called my principal a couple of times when I wasn't dressed properly according to her standards and told my boss, because I was a reading specialist, she's going to be late for her quarter to seven group that was on my time from quarter to seven to 8:30, 9 o'clock. And when I walked in, the principal said, if your mother didn't like what you were wearing, neither would I, because you're my assistant, and I would have sent you home anyway. I go, yeah, Ma, okay. She did a lot of things. So we have the head of programs in library, and I go to the library a lot, and I find, I don't know how you find them, very austere. No smiles, no sense of humor.
Oh, no. I don't find
they're all. They're horrible
no.
up here. And I know that I walked over to the section where you can buy books for a dollar, and I said, do you have any books on trains? Because my nephew's into trains, and the other one is into underwater animals. And they looked at me, he says, what are trains and underwater animal books? I said, and you're the librarian? Okay, what I found. What is the job of programs?
Well, no, I never had that experience. My library is a very warm place, and which may be that's why I use the library. I've always found libraries very warm, nurturing places. So what was your question? Sorry.
This one up here is very austere. Excuse us.
Uh-huh.
What is the job? When I went to the library as a kid, I would just walk in and they would say, there's about 20 books we know you're going to take out, and you were only allowed to take out three. They let me take out whatever I wanted. They didn't care.
Uh-huh.
So what is the job of the head of programs and events, and what type of events do they host? Be- because
libraries today have many.
This was great.
Well, libraries today have many, many programs and classes. And, for example, in my own library, and I do bring this into the book, we have food programs. Chefs come and they give us out recipes, three or four recipes, which they prepare right in front of us, and we eat. I mean, sometimes they prepare some of it at home, but they do show us how to do it. And, oh, my God, these programs fill up right away. There's all kinds of programs about, anything historical. Sundays, there are concerts, classes, author's visits. I'm going to be at my library next week. Book clubs, I see people playing mahjong there. Once I filled in for teaching English as a second language, all kinds of programs. And the library, and of course, programs to the kids, films. And Carrie gets all excited because she wants to institute many new programs. But the gal who's leaving, she's going to California, she reminds her that there are many programs already going on. And, you know, if they're popular, they have to be continued. So, but she's always on the lookout for new programs. And everything is so available because it's, you know, the electronic age is here, and it's in the library as well.
Yeah, it is. It's great. I know I don't see it in the library where I go. But I saw it when I lived in the Bronx, that they had programs for teens that didn't have internet access, and they had computers for them that they could use to do their homework and everything.
Right.
I don't see it at this one at all. As a matter of fact, if you ask a question, I probably could know the answer before they do. I mean, they're good, but like I said, it's a cold atmosphere, unfortunately. So tell us about Aunt Harriet, and I love Uncle Bosco, and he tries to help her every single which way he can. And why does he help her all the time?
Well,
she wants to be independent, yet she's not.
Well, I think it's really good for her that she had those few months of extra special nurturing from her great aunt and uncle, because when she comes in May, she's depressed. She's very unhappy. Mm. She's been floating from one town to another, never really settling for long. And I think she really needs the nurturing of family that her parents never gave her. And it's a very familiar place in the sense that she and her brother is now deceased, spent summers at the farm. And so she has happy memories of the place. Uncle Bosco is a pretty important figure in town. He is on the library board, and which is why he was able to get her a job at the library, which is really part of the reason why Sally doesn't like Carrie at first. Also because at that point, Sally is friendly with Dorothy, and Dorothy is a very sour reference librarian, and she really wanted Carrie's job, and she's angry that Carrie got the job.
Yeah, I know she's angry, and she's not a nice person, and I would definitely be careful of her.
I would,
and
too.
And isn't she... She's related to Sally, right? She is related
to
Sally.
No, she's related.
Oh, she's
related to
Evelyn.
She's
related to the ghost, right?
Yes, Evelyn Havers used to work at the library. She was an aide, and she was a woman in her 60s, and she died 6 years earlier. She had a tragic accident in the parking lot at night, and she's the one who coaxes Carrie to consider taking the job. Now, very few people can see Evelyn. Evelyn can be seen by Carrie and Carrie's little cousin who's 4 years old, and the little cousin keeps trying to give Evelyn cookies, and of course Evelyn can't eat cookies. Now Evelyn never had children, and she was close to her sister's three children, and Dorothy was the most difficult of her nieces and nephew. But she also was very drawn to Dorothy. Even as a child, she tells Carrie later on, Dorothy was a sourpuss. She wasn't nice to people. She was resentful of her sister and brother. And somehow Evelyn always was very sympathetic to her. And she was best able to handle Dorothy, because you can imagine she was a difficult child. And she was the reference librarian. Yeah,
I think Evelyn, I could use somebody like Evelyn once in a while to fix things that bother me and to tell me what's really going on. That's so cool. Yeah. So we have Trish and Susan. Trish is better than Susan, but you know, she learned.
Well,
so
you
what
know,
are their roles in?
Well, okay, Carrie is thrown into this job because Barbara, the previous head of programs at Eve Rentz, is moving to California, and she's very capable, and she has two part-time assistants. Trish, who, as you say, is very capable. She's very, very on target. She's a young mother. She's a little bit old. Carrie is about to turn 30, and Trish is a few years older, and Trish lives in the neighborhood. She's a very capable, warm person who you would want to be your assistant. Susan is another matter. She's kind of a wispy kind of person. She's not very she's ineffectual at times, but as you see later on in the book, Carrie discovers what Susan is good at, and she's able to nurture and bring Susan along and get her to function better, you know, as a helper.
Well, at least she doesn't do what Dorothy wants to do.
No, Dorothy is goes and does nasty things purposely.
I know.
Yes.
She sounds like some people I used to know. Not good.
Yeah.
So she has an event, and she has this guy that she wants to give a speech, Al Buckley. And he was given a chance to give a presentation about a cold case that has never been solved. And that was the case. And tell us about the Foster family that's sitting there. And tell us what happens to poor Al. Oh, I felt so bad. I felt bad for Carrie, too.
Yeah. Well, Carrie, this program was arranged previously by Barbara. Mm. And it stirred a lot of interest. What it was is... this woman, Laura Foster, had been murdered, and she not only was a person who lived in town, but she also worked in the library. She was a part-time worker, and Al Buckley was the homicide detective in charge of solving her murder. I mean, not that they had that many police, but... he was in charge of her case. But it was also a very bad time in his life because he was drinking a great deal, and he was very ineffectual, and the case was not solved. And very shortly after that, Al left the force. Now, 15 years later, he's claiming that he now knows who murdered Laura, and he's writing a book about it. And what it is, he's arranged this to have a talk at the library, and where he wants to discuss the case and his book, etc. And now Laura leaves a husband and two sons, and the oldest son is a very angry person. And he calls Sally, and he tells her she better cancel the program. But Carrie is all excited. This is her first big program since she's taken the job. And she's very excited about having someone come, like Al, come and speak, because every single seat in the you had to get a ticket for this program, because it's limited seating. The library will be expanded in a year or two, but you know, at this point, the meeting room is not, can only hold about 60 people, and she urges her to go, Sally, to go on with the program. And she goes out, she's very excited, and she buys cookies for the program, and she sets it up, and she has people have cookies and coffee before the program so they can sit quietly and listen to what goes on. And people come to, as I said, every seat is included, is taken. And the foster family comes to to hear her speak. The father, Laura's husband, Bryce, and her two sons, Jared and Ryan. Ryan is older. And her brother and the family lawyer, who is also a very good friend of the family, and her best friend, Helena. And that, who they're all present when Al starts to talk. And instead of revealing anything, Al starts to ask questions about Laura. What do the people in the audience remember about Laura? What can they say about Laura that they think no one else might know about her? And that is what he's talking about when he gets very, very ill and dies. So
that's not exactly the way you want your first event to go, to call the police and have the main event die. I told you people, it's not so safe to go to library. You got to be really careful.
Oh,
you got to make
is.
Sure that Evelyn's watching over you, because you could wind up deadly overdue also. I mean, really.
Well, Carrie is very, very upset. I forgot to add, she's never met Al Buckley before, but she's very, very touched by him, because he listens to her. He listens. Mm-hmm. He has this very kindly demeanor, it kind of reminds her of her father, which is very upsetting, because she loved her father so much, but he was always absent. Even when he wasn't in jail, he was always away. And so she really liked this man, and she feels responsible for his murder, for his death. They don't know that it's murder at first, of course, but she's devastated that somebody died on her watch, someone she cared about. And, of course, she thinks she's going to lose her job because Sally didn't want to have him, and she influenced Sally. She urged Sally to go on with the program. I mean, who would guess that someone would be murdered in a library?
Especially when she figures maybe she decided to give him the wrong cookies or something, but we're not going to talk about that. So
no.
We've got Jared,
right.
And let me explain to people, you got to be careful when you date somebody. That's all I'll say.
Yes,
so,
well, Jared was...
Jared. Yeah, I don't like him. He's too persistent. I mean, really, give the girl some breathing room here. But
well, what happens is that Jared is Laura Foster's youngest son. And, you know, he's very friendly. And he's always kept up with, for the 15 years that since his mother's death, he kept up with Al Buckley. And as his brother disliked Al, but Jared always kept up with him. And they talk about the case, and they decide that it must be very possibly the same person murdered his mother and Al. And he and they join forces, is what it is. He and Carrie join forces to find out who is who has murdered these two people. And that is how they get involved. And somehow, you're right, Carrie is always being thrown into foster family affairs. which is good because she gets to know and gets to check out these people, but it's not always very pleasant. It's not always very pleasant. I mean, Ryan is nasty to his brother. He belittles him. And there's just a lot of weird things going on. So
yeah, they are a strange group. I wouldn't want to go to dinner there either. And after a while, she didn't want to go either. And he sort of said, well, you're coming. And then at that point, I would have, you know, done what I did when I was a kid and paid my brother $5 to get rid of some of my dates, and it worked every time. No, seriously.
Oh, well, that's good. I know. And but then she gets friendly with Ryan's girlfriend, and she likes her.
Yeah.
She likes her better than any of the others. Yeah. So that is it. But on the same, by the same token, she's trying to find out more information about these people. So, but you're right. She at one point she is interested in Jared, but things kind of change.
Yeah, he is strange. So we've got another character that we're going to just touch on a tidbit, not a lot. Tell us about Helena Koppel, and why does everyone, what does she think that everyone tells about Laura that could ruin her? Why does she ruin her name? The woman is dead, and she's coming out with something that just to make her sound awful, and I didn't like her either.
Well, Helena, I know, well, either Jared doesn't like Helena at all. Helena was his mother's best friend, and as he tells Carrie, she always wants to be the center of attention. And and she hasn't even been living in the town, and she comes, and she's suddenly interested in moving back. And she just throws everyone into, everyone is upset, because what does she say? She dares to make an announcement that Laura wanted a divorce. Where did this come from? And I mean, Jared thinks she's lying. She's looking for attention, and she's very annoying. I mean, who needs her around? So yes, she's a very annoying person, and she's we won't go into it, but she starts dating someone close to the family.
And we won't say who it is because that would sort of kill it, Pierre. So, Jared's we talked about his relationship with his family. So why does Ryan always so nasty to Jared? He seems resentful. I don't like him at all.
I know. He's an older brother. It's his temperament, and he was in high school he would get into trouble. He was very angry at the time of his mother's murder, and he just has a very bad disposition. And Carrie honestly wonders if he killed his mother she's not sure what may have been going on at that time. He was a teenager. He was a junior at the time in college. So, in high school. So he was driving. He really cannot account for the time where he was when his mother died, and we know that he doesn't like Al Buckley. That's very evident. He did not want Al Buckley to speak at the library. He did what he could to dissuade him. So he's always picking on Jared, and Jared acts as if nothing's happening, which annoys Carrie. Mm. She said, "How could you let your brother talk to you that way? You know, doesn't it bother you?"
Mm-hmm.
But that's part of the dynamics of the family. You know, Jared seems to have not much affect. He just seems it's really, she begins to understand that maybe he has never really matured enough. He's never really become a man, so to speak. You know, he's still a young boy, probably traumatized by his mother's murder.
Well, then we meet somebody that I do like, and Carrie decides that she doesn't want to live with her aunt and uncle anymore, and she decides that she's going to look for a place to live. And at first you think that maybe he's a sinister character, but when you get to know him, well, you decide. So his name is Dylan, and he plays a role in helping Carrie get a place of her own. And so why do we know she wants him, she likes him right away? Because that happens. You know, you meet somebody and you just know, okay, he's the one. I'm not going to let him go. And anybody that gets in my way, I'm going to stomp on you. That's it. So what is his real
yes,
job?
Dylan,
why did you bring him into this novel alongside Carrie? And I hope you bring him back because I like him.
Well, Dylan Avery lives in a beautiful mansion, practically, and it's the thing is that he's hardly ever there because he's an investigative reporter, and he's an investigative detective, and he's constantly looking, chasing after jewels that have been stolen or artwork. And which takes him all over the country and outside of the country. Now, Dylan, there's also a cottage on the property, and Carrie doesn't have much money because she hasn't been really working. She just got this. She was not making much when she was just doing that very low-level job in the library. Well, now she has a job, but she hasn't saved any money, and she's sure that she can't pay for this cottage. She sees the ad for the cottage in the cafe where she often has lunch, and she also sees it posted in the newspaper. But she says she decides to go and take a look. And the voice on the phone is very gruff and very abrupt, and she's a little put off by it, but she decides to go and see. And when she gets to meet Dylan, he's not as abrupt or gruff as she thought. And the cottage is absolutely beautiful. It's on the river, and she knows she can't afford it, but he gives it to her for a very low price, and she decides to take it. And he tells her that he's away a lot, and he feels he can trust her and to bring in his mail and to mail it to him. If she would do that, he could rent her the cottage for a very reasonable, low, actually, price. And
yeah,
so
I found that kind
cottage.
Of odd. I'm saying, okay, what kind of mail does this guy have? And I'm going, yeah, well, you never know. But
right.
Sometimes you make a decision and you make the right one. So.
And later on she finds out that there is a connection that he used to play with her brother. He was her brother's friend when they were very young.
Mm-hmm.
And so she thinks, well, maybe that's why he did it, because, you know, because he feels he can trust her. He's like family, you know, he knows the Singleton family, and he used to play with Jordan when they were kids. When Jordan and Carrie used to come to the farm, you know, and he lived not too far away.
See, you never know. Things happen for a reason, people. You just don't know. But let's get back to my favorite character in the book, the ghost. Now, Sally is wicked, and she doesn't realize that Carrie's got somebody watching over her. And
Dorothy is bad. She's not friendly at all. Sally is not very friendly at all. That's true.
No. And so she decides she's going to destroy Carrie just to see how good she really is. And she hands her what everybody loves, billing receipts that no one else alive seemed to be able to do. And she throws them at her and threatens her. And if she says anything about Dorothy or whatever, that wouldn't be good either. So how does Evelyn help her to do something that Sally almost falls off the floor when she says, oh my God, how did you do that? Oh my God.
Well, that's funny. Well, the thing is that you find out later, and we don't go into it, but Sally, Dorothy has a knack of finding out little things about people.
Mm-hmm.
That little things that they're embarrassed about and they don't want other people to know about. And she holds this over people. And she did this to Sally. And which was a very stupid thing because Sally was her only friend in the library. For some reason or other, Sally was friendly. So she at first convinced Sally, well, let's just put it this way. Sally was part of the reason Sally was so hostile to Carrie was on behalf of Dorothy. And so she gives Carrie all these forms that she has to fill out related to money that she spent that month. And they're very complicated forms, and people have problems with these forms. And most of the people are very late in handing them in. But does Carrie know this? No. But so Sally hands her these papers, and she tells her she has to have them handed back in a few days. And Carrie is very upset because she didn't keep great records, and also there were like all these different boxes, and she's not sure how and where to put everything. And thank goodness Evelyn comes to her aid, and Evelyn tells her that she used to do them very often to the other heads, the other department heads. And so Evelyn works with her, and very soon Carrie catches on, and she's able to return the forms to get Sally very quickly, faster than Sally expected them back. She's dumbfounded. But, of course, Carrie does not reveal her secret. Why should she? It was a nasty thing that Sally had done.
Yeah, she's not a they're not nice people. This is a very difficult book to, you know, get come out alive, too. I don't know, people. You better be careful of this library. So we have the first event, and it's a movie event, and then poor Carrie can't find the movie. What happened to the movie?
Well, Susan was putting on the movie, and she comes running to Carrie saying that the film that they were supposed to show has disappeared. And Carrie figures it out, and Evelyn kind of tells her as well and she finds it in the stacks back where it shouldn't have been, and they put the movie on she handles it beautifully. She goes downstairs to where the people are waiting to see the movie, and she tells them that there's a slight delay, and she does bring back the movie pretty much on time, which is just showing you how she really has all of these resources within herself, and she's able to handle her new job, including the boomerangs that Dorothy is throwing at her. I mean, this is out-and-out sabotage to hide a movie that your colleague is about to show. So, you know, she's getting a little annoyed with this. This is not really what should be happening.
Yeah, I can imagine. But then you have to figure out she wants the job, so she makes her look really bad and stupid. Then
she's
happy.
Trying to make her look bad. So far, she hasn't met with much success.
Well, don't worry. Carrie's nobody to be fooled with, people.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, Al is a nice guy, and poor Carrie at first figures it's her fault that he's dead, because she invited him there, blah blah blah. But you didn't do what happened to him. It's not your fault. So tell us about the detective in charge of the case, and why does he want to pinpoint Ryan or Jared or the father, and is he really that dumb?
Well, the police are not as responsive as you would think they should be, because in fact people. Ryan threw this at Al Buckley. Well, why don't you go to the police if you know so much? Because actually, the police, they don't have any faith in Al Buckley. He was on the force. Mm-hmm. He did not solve the murder, and he did not provide them with any actual facts or any proof of who murdered Laura. So, and that, so the case is still a cold case. And that is why they go ahead and it's not that he's stupid. And later on you see that that Carrie does become friends with John, but it takes a very, very long time. Because even later on when she goes looking for information about Laura's murder, he's not very helpful, you know. He tells her this is a cold case, or he tells her, well, this is connected to Al Buckley's death. I can't share it with you. And she believes that he's ineffectual, which he really isn't. But he's not going to help her, that's for sure. You know, he thinks she's just a meddler, you know. So that's why. But Carrie just takes it on herself to solve the case.
So well, she's going to become the new Agatha Christie or Miss Marple. Well, my favorite one, Hedy Winthrop, which is which who I love.
That was her. Wonderful.
And,
she'll
try to imitate my other favorite person, Hercule Poirot. I love him too. So,
without the accent.
Yes, I love him. So without the following people will be, you know, here on Thursday. This is a new one for me. Trust me, it's a self-help book. It's called Ula: How to Be Awesome Women, and they will be here, the Ula group, at 10 on Thursday. Next Tuesday, we will have a doubleheader. I'm doing two books in the same day. Murder in Dog Days. Yes, it's going to be tough. And Murder Misread by Carlson. And on Thursday, one of my favorite authors on this planet, Barry Kerwin, is going to call in from France. And we're going to talk about the sequel to his first book, and it's about 37 hours. And on the 24th, we have Bones to Pick. And on the 26th, we have New York Times author Reese Hirsch, the Insider. And on the 30th, I'm so excited, New York Times best-selling romance novelist for Thief's Mark, Carlin Eggers, will be here. And that's just some of the mischief that Fran's up to for the next couple of weeks. Yeah, I got lucky. And on November 1st, Lynn and Valerie Constantine will be here for The Last Mrs. Parrish. And the next day I'll have David McCalla with Reload. And that's just not even half of what's coming up next. But
you're amazing, friend.
For those of you that have no idea what to buy for Hanukkah, my holiday, and your holiday, and for Christmas, and for Kwanzaa, and any other holiday you need a present for, Death Overdue is on sale today. Ha-ha. Today's the day to get it. And Monsterland by Michael Oaken. And when I started to read it, I'm saying this is about a man who decided to create theme parks with vampires, werewolves, and zombies. And as I'm reading it, I'm saying this book is, if you know anything about terrorist attacks or whatever, and people taking control, this book was really good. The book I finished this morning in 2 days, not even, A True Mercy by Kirsten. That's me. And this one is about human sex trafficking and the little boy that's autistic. It's very good. One that's not out yet that I just read yesterday, too, Pen 13. It's also about human sex trafficking. And, that's just what Fran read this week. And there's always next week. I've got a whole bunch more. And so the part of the event that I really like is, how did you create the recipes? Because I was getting hungry reading this book.
Which recipe?
The recipes for the great meals for each event. How did you decide what they were gonna create? Because I was getting hungry reading them. Besides the cookies.
Oh well, you know, I just think up, because as I said, in my library, my friend Anne Marie is in charge of bringing in chefs. So I thought, and I know other libraries do too. So I thought, well, I'm going to have chefs come into my library at Clover Ridge, and then you see I even went to a store. Well, later on, Carrie, I do give this away. Carrie, Sally softens, and she sees that Carrie's a very good worker, and they even go to a warehouse for cooking utensils and supplies, and so they buy it for the library. I just made it up. I just know some of the things that we've made here. We've had wonderful things. You know, we have some chefs come back again and again and again, and the programs fill up immediately. So, I mean, food is always a big part of our lives, and I know I'm always having my characters go to dinner. In fact, my editor said, I think she said that some of my she ordered one dish too many times at too many restaurants, so I had to change it. So I just wanted to say one word about Smokey Joe, because for people who love animals, Carrie finds a kitten. A kitten finds her one morning, and this is Smokey Joe. He's a half-grown gray cat with a very bushy tail. And he jumps into the car, and then he jumps out when they get to the library, and she manages to grab him, and she brings him in, and he runs to the children's room, and Carrie is talking to the librarian Marion there, and all the kids are going crazy over him, and he's a stray cat from a nearby farm, but he's very, very friendly. He's extraordinarily social. And the children's librarian falls in love with him immediately. And Carrie has enough sense, and she says, "Oh, well, this is the library cat." And sure enough, Marion says, "Oh, that's wonderful." And Sally, who actually likes cats, she on the spot says, "Oh, okay." And so Smokey Joe becomes a fixture in the library. And, I mean, he goes home with Carrie every day, but he becomes a very important character, and he plays an important role in the next book. So
I was
going to
wonder. I'm hoping that you bring him back, because he seems to be very. I think Evelyn and he have something going on here. I don't know.
Who's that?
I think Evelyn and the cat.
Evelyn. He's not comfortable with Evelyn. He hisses and jumps into the air, because at this point, you know, Evelyn, she comes on. She's like a strange presence. You know, it's like a cold.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if she touched you, it would be cold. Carrie once or twice she tries to reach out to Carrie. You know, and Carrie feels this coldness. So he's not really comfortable with her. At least by the second book, he's not comfortable with her at all. But you know, they manage in the library. Evelyn's not always in the library. She comes and goes, and Smokey Joe, he's there during the day, but as I said, he certainly comes back in the next book, which is called Red and Gone, and the book is done. In fact, I just got my first edits from my editor. I started going over them. Very, very little stuff. I have very little work to do on it, she said. She liked it very much. So I'm glad
that's lucky.
That
is lucky.
Yeah.
And it's lucky to find a good editor, because I'm reading like six books, like I said, and all of these books are New York Times authors. Well, some of them aren't, but some of them have. I found typos this morning and three typos in one book. And I'm going to, you know, when I finish reading it, the book is interesting, and I will tell the publicist that the person that wrote it wrote an interesting story, but I found some extra words or some grammatical errors, and I don't normally look for them, but I read this thing twice, and I'm going like, huh? But yeah.
Yeah. My editor, Faith, is wonderful, and I had a very good copy editor as well, and they're very, very careful at my publishers with something like this, Crooked Lane Books. I'm very happy with them, and they are very, very careful with that. So
you're lucky.
But, you know, I am. I certainly am. I appreciate it. Believe me, I appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm working with one person, and then I realized that she didn't catch everything, so I caught some. And then I had my new publisher read it, and they didn't catch everything either. And it's funny, because I sent the book to my cousin, and she said she found a few errors, and I was glad she did. So we went over that for over 2 hours, so there are no errors in A Daughter's Promise, which is my book based on making a promise to my mother that I would never put her in a nursing facility. And I'm very happy to say that Providence Books, which is also Partners in Crime, which are fantastic, are doing my blog tour. They're doing my tour. It started on October 1st. I've gotten some pretty nice reviews. I got one comment yesterday about a section in my book being repeated, and I did answer the reviewer and saying I had the section repeated in a different way to make my point.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, well, she said nobody else noticed it. I knew it was there. The publisher knew it was there, and they said leave it because it'll make drive the point home as to what it took to take care of my mom for 10 years with Alzheimer's.
Wow,
and
that is amazing.
They threw the note, yeah. So what happens when she finds a piece of evidence that could, you know, name the person that Laura might have a thing with, but she tells Jared to keep quiet? And you can't trust him.
Well, Jared is really very needy underneath it all.
Yeah.
In fact, that's why he puts up with his brother's, you know, tormenting.
Yeah.
And he, so he wants to, when his brother starts goading them, oh, what have the two investigators found, and what have they learned? He starts spilling. Oh, well, we did this, we spoke to that one, we did that. And this is after Carrie asked him not to say anything to anyone in his family.
Mm-hmm.
And she realizes she just can't trust him. So when she discovers something, which we won't say how or where she discovers it.
Yeah, we won't.
She decides not to share it with him. And even this is still very tormenting because all it refers to, Laura's written something and it only refers, she only puts an initial. And again, that initial can refer to so many people, but she has to keep it from Jared because, and then even at one point she's wondering, could Jared have murdered his mother? Could he have really murdered Al? You know, she finds that she's suspicious of everyone, and she keeps finding out more and more about people. She finds she unearths one of Jared's secrets that, you know, she was kind of horrified, which made her a little afraid of him. And and so it goes. So she's really on her own. And even Evelyn is not very forthcoming. Because Evelyn has her own reasons for not sharing what she could. And she makes it very difficult. So you can't say that Evelyn is helping Carrie. She's
not all the time, no.
She's kept a lot of things really hidden. So because it goes back to a premise that I write under. Everyone has secrets, and everyone does not, and people do not, and by not sharing, the picture is never complete or never exposed. And so the person who is digging has to dig much further and to find out what the true and real story is.
Well, when they read the final scenes, what we're not going to say, the whole bunch of people are together, and all of a sudden they figure it out. How did you create that last scene with so many people without giving it away? That was really amazing. So I'm saying I had a funny feeling who did it, but that's beside the point.
Well, I like to have scenes in my books very often where there are a lot of people at the end of a book. Sometimes it's a party, but very often it's a gathering of people. And I think in this case I'm being influenced by Agatha Christie. In fact, in my book Murder a la Christie, I deliberately have a meeting of the book club so that my sleuth, Lexi, can expose the murderer, in front of all these people. But in this case, it was very surprising. And, I mean, she was just very surprised by what she discovered. And I like the way the book ends, but that, you know, then I end on a very quiet note, you know, where she's just with Dylan, and it's very nice. So she's, you know, she's happy, and it's, you know, she's very happy at the end. And
well,
but
I hope she's coming back. So before we close, we have about 3 more minutes. What is next for you, and where can everybody learn about your books and your works? And those people that haven't read all of Marilyn's books, what are you waiting for? I've read every one of them. And every one of them is different. Every one of them is unique.
Well, thank you.
What can I tell you? Yeah, I just got an email from New York Times author Daniel Palmer wondering why I didn't email him about the book he just sent me, and I never got it. This is what's been happening. I don't know why. I think somebody, the people in my building know that I read, and I know I'm a reviewer. So I can walk in the elevator, and they'll go, what do you got for us? And I think somebody's taken some of my books, because I was supposed to get Captain Hall Page and Daniel Palmer.
Didn't get my book either. Sarah had to send you another book.
No, I got two of them. I got two of them, and my cousin took one right out of my hand before I could even open up the cut.
I hope she enjoys it. Well,
she's
I must say that people have been letting me know how much they love the book. The book, I mean, has taken off. I cannot believe how it got a starred and pick of the month review from the Library Journal.
Oh, nice.
It's a book club, Mystery Literary Guild book club selection. It was made into an audio by Blackstone immediately. Goodreads.
Oh, nice.
I love this. In September, it was number 111 out of 200 of the most popular books on Goodreads for October 2017. That was in September, which made me chuckle. And I keep hearing from people who have read it on, you know, they got it through NetGalley and they loved it. And there are many reviews up. And I'm just so happy, and because really my goal is just to give someone a happy read. I want readers to enjoy what I've written. That is my goal, and I'm thrilled that, you know, I seem to have succeeded in this, and so many people love the book. They love Carrie. And, of course, you know, there's always one, you know, she found Carrie, I don't know what she found, her flat or something, and she had some nerve being critical of people when she came from her own dysfunctional family. But, you know, I think you're not really in the world if you haven't gotten a review like that. If you haven't gotten a 1 out of 5, you know, you're not in the real world, because there's always somebody wanting to do that for some reason or other. But, you know, if so many people tell you what joy that you've brought them by giving them this wonderful read, it just really warms your heart. It you know, I've succeeded in doing what I set out to do. So I'm really happy about it.
Yeah, I know how you feel. My first Faces Behind the Stones book. It was written from the point of view of the dead body behind the stones.
Yes, I know that. Yes.
Four-star reviews. Well, somebody gave me 2 stars, but she didn't read the book. She said, I can't understand this book, so I'll give her 2 stars. And that was like, huh? Okay. And I called Amazon, and they don't care.
I didn't care.
Wait to get my review next.
You know
They'll take you off. They'll take that off, because if the person didn't read your book, they'll take it off.
I know, but
really
I have seen that. I have seen people get 1 stars because for the same reason. I didn't read this book, but I don't like it. It's not what I thought it would be. I got something about a children's book. They redid one of my children's books, and this is not the book I expected, it doesn't have the same cover, or I had nothing to do with it, you know. And it's just this, you know, this is dealing with the public. And as long as the majority of your reviews are good, you know, I looked up some very famous, well-known authors, and I see they plenty of 1-2s. And what does it matter? You know, it's people are like that. So, you know, it's part of the writing life, I think.
Yeah, you got to have a thick skin, but guess what book? I'm getting a book by a famous person, and the publicist emailed me yesterday, and it's going to be tough because the person's got 1,500 reviews, and I would say about 900 are bad. I'm going to be reading What Happened by Hillary Clinton this week.
Oh, God. Yeah,
They're sending it to me, and Yeah, she can't do any interviews because she's busy. And I emailed the publicist and said it might behoove you to rethink that after what I read on Google this morning, and I'm not going to say more. But I want to thank you so very much, and I want to hope I get the next book before it comes out again. And I've got 5 minutes. I'm going to make the show live. I don't make my shows live because there are a lot of people out there that are in chat rooms, and I don't want to deal with them. And I don't want to deal with negative people. I don't have time for that. So I'm going to make the show live, and I'm going to post my 10-star review in a few minutes on Just Reviews, which has been named one of the top review sites by Inkit. This year I got an award for one of the top reviews on the internet, review sites on the internet. So we're going to put yours on there. Also, your 5-star review will go on there in about 5 minutes. And
oh,
I want to thank you so much. Oh, yes.
Oh, it's always
a
pleasure. Thank you for having me, Fran. I love
thank
to talk
you so
to
much,
you.
Marilyn. Everybody have a nice day. And if you don't know what to do, buy a couple hundred copies of Murder of Death Overdue, the rest of her books. And Hanukkah's coming. Have a nice day and bye.
Thank you. Bye.